Support for Valley Edition comes from the James Irvine Foundation.
This is Valley Edition, FM 89's weekly look at the issues that matter to the residents of the San Joaquin Valley.
Hello, I'm Juanita Stevenson, and welcome to Valley Edition. On our program today, helping troubled homeowners save their homes, what the Secretary of U.S. Housing and Urban Development wants you to know about refinancing your home mortgage, and Fresno's Sikh community reaches out to the victims of the Wisconsin shooting. We will talk to Sikh leaders about what they face here in the Valley. Plus, it's never too late to learn, the opportunity for seniors to learn how to play a musical instrument. But first, the housing crisis has left its mark on homeowners. An estimated 4 million families lost their homes to foreclosure between 2007 and 2012. Millions more are underwater and their mortgages and fear their homes will never be worth what they paid for them. The government's first efforts to help troubled homeowners didn't meet with much success. But in November, President Obama gave his Home Affordable Refinance Program, better known as HARP 2, some muscle, and indications are it is working. Joining me today is Sean Donovan, Secretary of U.S. Housing and Urban Development, and Valley Congressman Jim Costa. Thank you both.
Great to be with you.
Always.
But first, we do want to add that Mr. Donovan and Congressman Costa will be joining Fresno Mayor Ashley Swearingen later this morning at a refinance roundtable. They will be meeting with housing advocates and local homeowners to not only listen to their concerns, but share the new options homeowners have to save their homes. Again, thank you both. But why is it important, Secretary Donovan, that you be here to talk about this?
Well, you know, we have today the lowest interest rates for a 30-year mortgage in the history of the country. And usually when you have interest rates this low, it helps homeowners, it helps neighborhoods, it helps the whole economy because families save on average about $3,000 a year from refinancing. That has ripple effects into the economy through consumer spending. The problem is in a place like Fresno, where nearly half of homeowners are underwater, they've been locked out of refinancing. And so that's why the president took the actions that he did. That's why he's working with Congressman Costa to try to increase refinancing. And as you said just a moment ago, we're seeing results from that. We've seen almost a doubling in refinancing applications in California since the president put his plan into place. And on average, families are saving about $3,000 a year from being able to refinance. And so that's a real benefit to them, to their neighbors, and to the economy more broadly.
Now, what's the difference between HARP 2 and the original plan? Because I think there's a lot of confusion. That's why people are somewhat confused about the programs. I mean, who will this help and what do they need to do?
Well, perhaps the most important difference for Fresno homeowners is that before, for families that were deeply underwater, and when we say underwater, we mean somebody who owes more on their home than the home is worth. Their mortgage is bigger than the value of their house. For those that were deeply underwater, there was literally no way to refinance. There was no market for those loans. There was nobody to buy those loans. There was no way to create those loans before. We actually had to sit down and spent about 6 months creating a market for those deeply underwater loans. And so only in March could homeowners who were more than 125% loan to value, would they be able to refinance? And that is a huge number of folks in this region. We saw just in June alone more than 10 times increase in the number of deeply underwater homeowners who were able to refinance. That's perhaps the single most important difference. We'll be meeting the congressman and I later today with a homeowner named Elizabeth who had given up on being able to refinance. Somebody told her, hey, there's this change to HARP 2.0. Even though you're deeply underwater, you can have the opportunity to refinance. And she's successfully been able to do that just in the last few weeks. And we want to spread the word to make sure homeowners that are deeply underwater know that this is available to them.
And Juanita, I think what's really important, and I want to thank the Secretary for coming here to our Valley again and the president for this initiative that many of us have been urging, because some of us have been kind of at ground zero, we think, where the foreclosures have been the greatest in this country. I mean, we have 11 million plus homeowners in this country that are underwater effectively, and 2.7 million are estimated to be here in California. And the Valley, sadly, has been among the highest percentage of those in California.
The entire Central Valley's got a huge problem.
From Stockton to Bakersfield. Stockton's been number one, number two behind Las Vegas in foreclosures. Bakersfield got as high as number four. Merced County's been among the most impacted counties in California and therefore the nation. So this effort with HARP II that the secretary discussed, that the president rolled out earlier this year, we believe is very, very important, because if we're going to – this fragile economic recovery that we've been going through, if we're ever going to get it back on the solid footing that I think we all want to see it on, we've got to have a stable recovery of the housing market.
That's where it all starts.
Absolutely, because what this is in an effort to do, and some of us have been so focused on and asking for the help, is that when you have a spiraling effect of foreclosures, what occurs is then you get further decline in property values in neighborhoods. And when you have that and you get then abandoned homes, it becomes a further spiraling effect. And so even people who are able to make their monthly payment find their equity in their home plummeting as a result of this. So all of these efforts are focused with several goals in mind. Number one, to keep people in their home. That's obviously the most critical factor. And then number two is to stabilize the housing market so that we can find a floor on the values of these homes, so that we can begin the road to recovery.
If I could emphasize a point there, because the congressman is such an important point. If you live next door to a home that goes into foreclosure, even if you're doing everything right, paying your bills every day, when that sign goes up, that foreclosure sign next door, your own home loses $5,000 to $10,000 in value that very day. And so this isn't just about the individual families who are getting help directly. This is about entire neighborhoods and about the economy more broadly, because when you save $3,000 a year, what do you do with that money?
Hopefully you spend it in the local economy.
No, that's exactly right. It creates jobs.
First of all, okay, let's talk about the program, because people have a lot of questions about it. Who are we talking about? Who qualifies to participate in this program? From what I've read, you know, it's homeowners that are up to date on their mortgages, have no lates, and that sort of thing. So give us some information in that area.
Well, you hit on one of the most important things. Homeowners need to be current on their mortgages. So these are folks that are doing the right thing every month, whether it's working a couple jobs, scratching and saving to get by, but are staying current on their mortgages. And the other thing that's important, and this is one of the things that we're working to try to change with the help of the congressman, this is specifically for families that have government-insured mortgages. Now, the problem is most families don't even know whether they have a Fannie Mae or a Freddie Mac or an FHA mortgage. What they know is they're paying their bill every month and they're on time on their mortgage, and then they could benefit from a lower interest rate. So you need to reach out to your lender, find out whether you have a Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, or FHA mortgage, and that will tell you whether you're eligible for refinancing. But the president also believes, and I know the congressman shares this view, we shouldn't just make this available to those with government-insured mortgages. Again, it seems arbitrary because most people don't even know what kind of mortgage they have. And so at the same time that we've put HARP 2.0 in place, we've also proposed a legislation that's in front of Congress right now. We're hoping the Senate will vote right when they come back from break in September. And that would allow all homeowners that are current on their mortgages, whether they have a government-insured mortgage or not, to be able to refinance to today's low interest rates. And this is a top priority for the president. Frankly, if we had 500 Jim Costas in Congress, we wouldn't need to have this debate.
Well, I want to ask Congressman Costa, what do you think are the chances of this? Everybody's fully aware of the climate we have in Congress today. Do you think there is a will to get something like this passed? Because we're talking about something that impacts so many people and impacts the economy.
Well, I hope the will is there, is the short answer. Sadly, politics, especially this year, has trumped good public policy too often. But I think that when people go back to Washington in September, after being in their districts for the month of August, they're going to find that there are a lot of homeowners here that are just asking for a helping hand, and that this program is good public policy, it's good economics, and it makes sense. And at the end of the day, you know, home ownership is part and parcel of the American dream. And it's not a Republican or a Democratic notion. It's for 70 plus years under both Democratic and Republican administrations, we've attempted to foster policies that encourage home ownership. Because as I try to remind people, we just had a housing workshop this last Saturday in Fresno. We had over 150 people attend. We had counselors, we had the financial institutions, we had the Federal Home Loan Bank, and the single largest investment that the average American family ever makes in a lifetime is the purchase of a home. I mean, we don't think about it in those terms, but so many values come out of it, beginning with establishing a broad-based middle class.
Exactly.
But beyond that, it's how families learn the complexities of financing. It's how families learn the value of the pride of ownership, of property rights, of living in a neighborhood where they would like their children to be educated, living near a church or a synagogue where they worship. All of these things are intrinsically tied into the concept of home ownership. And so it's why it's such a fundamental, important aspect of our economy. And it's why it's so important to maintaining a broad-based middle class that is the rock of our nation.
Well, Secretary Donovan, thank you, Congressman Consta. Secretary Donovan, when you talked about what people need to do to move this process forward, are there services and lenders willing to work with them now? That had always been a problem.
It has been a real problem, and Congressman said earlier that this is something he's been focused on for a long time. And I will tell you, he's been one of the most vocal advocates from the beginning of the time that the president came into office that we needed to do more. We needed to go farther to help folks. And frankly, one of the biggest problems we've had is that the servicers, the companies that handle these mortgages, frankly, we're not doing the right thing. We're not stepping up to the plate to make changes, and they needed to get their acts together in order to make sure we could reach more homeowners. That's one of the things that led to this record mortgage servicing settlement that we reached earlier this year. Kamala Harris, the state attorney general here in California, was very helpful. One of 49 attorneys general around the country, 24 Republicans, 25 Democrats, that reached the largest state federal settlement in the history of the country, that both makes sure that there's more than $25 billion of help that goes to homeowners with their mortgages, but also equally important, creates a homeowner bill of rights, a strong set of standards that these companies have to live up to. And if they don't, there's real teeth, fines, court action, and other things that can follow. And so we're starting to see some improvement in the way that homeowners are being treated. But the real test will be on October 1st. All of these standards from the Homeowner Bill of Rights go into effect. And we're going to be watching to make sure that we don't see the same kind of behavior we saw in the past, the dropped calls, the lost paperwork, my bank asked me to fill out this paperwork to get help. I just mailed it in and I got a foreclosure notice the next day. Those kind of things just simply can't be allowed to continue to happen. And we're going to be watching closely to make sure that they don't. The other thing I would just say is one of the real risks here, the very same scam artists that were selling these terrible loans have now shifted to trying to take advantage of families in fixing those loans. We hear all the time calls, letters saying, hey, pay us a few $100 or a few $1,000. We can help you fix your mortgage. Anybody out there that needs help should know that there is free help available. HUD-certified housing counselors are available 24 hours a day, just a phone call or a click on a website away. The best way to reach them is through the HOPE hotline. That's 888-995-HOPE. And our studies show that a homeowner is twice as likely to be able to stay in their home if they get help from a housing counselor. And so that's critical as well.
Let me just underline, though, what the Secretary indicated. First of all, their efforts with the administration, the Secretary's leadership, and the President with the action on behalf of the 49 states to reach the settlement is so key to reworking or working out these foreclosure issues, in which many of these financial institutions, as the Secretary noted, were the culprits to begin with when they created the subprime loan crisis on the fractionalization of these mortgages. But having said that, the meat and potatoes of what most congressional offices do is their casework. And we take a lot of pride every day in responding to our constituent requests. Now, in the last year, we've had over 200 people in our families come to our because they couldn't get response from their financial institutions.
I mean, that's been one of the
They couldn't get
complaints.
Their phone calls returned, as the Secretary noted. Or they get
lost the paperwork.
Lost the paperwork, or they get hung up. And then, by the way, they're trying to follow the process, and this is complicated for many families. And then they find out by the time they finally get to the starting line that they're told by the financial institution, sorry, you're too late. Well, what do you mean we're too late? We tried 2 months ago. We tried 3 months ago. So Kelly Gill, who does a terrific job on my office and the rest of our staff, I mean, it's so sad when these families come in with their papers, their loan docs, and crying. I mean, this has been the largest investment in their life. And they're trying to hang on to their home, and they got children, and so the hotline that HUD provides, our efforts on our office that we provide, I mean, it is numbers of folks that we have, many people in our district that we've been able to keep in their home as they were getting ready to lose it within weeks.
And Juanita, you know, this is why the President and Congressman Costa and others in Congress fought so hard to create a Consumer Financial Protection Bureau as well. You know, we're having a debate about whether we need strong protections for homeowners and for consumers. We never had an agency in Washington whose sole focus was to protect consumers. And in some ways, one of the things that got us into this crisis, we had more protections for somebody buying a toaster than we did for making the single most important financial decision of their lives, which was to get a mortgage and buy a home. And so we need to make sure that we protect that Consumer Financial Protection Bureau so that we can protect consumers going forward when they're buying homes.
And the Homeowner Bill of Rights is a fundamental part of this effort that the Secretary has been adamant on.
I mean, I think it's going to be vital because of some of the past problems that we've seen with people trying to get help with their mortgages. So many people have just been discouraged, and maybe that's why many of them quit moving forward on this. What are some of the other portions of this legislation that really impacts people and that they should know about?
Well, we talked about the fact that one of the biggest problems is that if you don't have a federally insured mortgage today, you're not going to be able to refinance if you're underwater. And so that's one key piece. But the other thing that I would mention that's so important here, first of all, we need to create more competition between lenders. Right now what we're seeing is that there isn't enough competition, and that means homeowners are having to pay too much when they refinance their mortgage. Even if they're successful in doing it, they may pay thousands of dollars in fees that they shouldn't have to. And so one of the bills that's introduced by Senator Boxer from California would create more competition even for those who are already eligible to refinance. And the last thing, and this is perhaps the most important, one of the things most folks don't realize is that these low interest rates and refinancing will help homeowners rebuild their equity as well. Many families choose, instead of taking their savings by lowering their payment every month, they shorten the length of their loan, keep their payment the same, and accelerate the rebuilding of their equity. Most families, if they do that, can get back above water in just a couple years, even in a place like Fresno where many families are deeply underwater. And so we want to encourage that. One of the bills introduced by Senator Merkley of Oregon would allow the closing costs on average about $3,000 to be covered, to be paid for a homeowner that chooses to use their savings to rebuild equity. And as the congressman talked about before, remember how important this is for families. Savings in our homes is the way most families pay for college. It's the way most families start a small business. It's the way they save for retirement. So when there are those out there who would say, just let the housing market hit bottom, we shouldn't do anything for these families. You have to remember what you're telling those families is they have to give up on those dreams. And that's why we need to pass this legislation. And we need to do it now. We only have a few days when Congress comes back before they leave again for the elections. This is a top priority. We need to get these bills passed right away.
One of the things that I wanted to mention and point out, when we talk about the efforts here, which are all good efforts, this piece of legislation really is for people who are current on their mortgage. They obviously have jobs. But here in the Valley, we have a huge unemployment rate. And so the people, many of the homeowners here, they're not going to be current. You know, what do we do with those people?
Well, first of all, and it's important that we're talking today on your program to get the word out. It's important that we had the workshop last Saturday to provide opportunities for families to come together. I was on the housing program a week ago last Saturday that provides information to homeowners. Too often in the last year, 18 months, even with HEMP and HARP before HARP 2 came out, folks come to us too late. You know, if they had come to us while they were current or they were a month in the arrears of the repayment of their monthly mortgage, we could be more helpful. But too often we find these homeowners, it is so sad, come to us when they're now 3 months, 4 months down the road, and these are the people you're talking about, Juanita. And in those instances, trying to craft efforts to provide the support has been among the challenges that we have faced. And the last thing we want, at least that I don't want to see happen, is to incentivize people in some de facto way to walk away from their homes, because that only creates that increasing impact on that spiraling effect that creates property values to decline. So, you know, the Secretary, the administration, those of us in Congress who feel this is absolutely a key issue in a strong road to financial recovery, understand that this has to be addressed.
And Juanita, let me add to that. You know, you rightly said that HARP, the refinancing effort, is focused on families that are current. Let's remember, 90% of families that are underwater are paying their bills every month, are current. So there's a huge group of homeowners that this can help. And if we can get this legislation passed, there are, we estimate, probably close to 15 million additional homeowners around the country that could benefit from refinancing. So it's critical, but you also raise an important point. For that smaller group that are behind on their mortgages, there need to be options as well. I talked about this mortgage servicing settlement earlier. We expect more than $15 billion of help. Probably close to 500,000 homeowners could benefit around California. That's primarily focused on those who are behind on their mortgages, and in particular, to get principal reduced on their mortgages. What we've learned more and more through this crisis is that for those that are deeply underwater and they're having trouble making their payments, if we can reduce the value of their mortgages and get them to a place where they have a light at the end of the tunnel, they're more likely to pay. And guess what? Not only is that good for that family, as the congressman said, they're less likely to default. It's good for their neighbors who may be paying their mortgages, but if a house sits vacant next door, their own homes go down in value. It's also good for the economy more broadly because it helps the housing market to recover. And so we do have efforts. This mortgage servicing settlement is one. There are other efforts like our HAMP program that help homeowners that get behind in their mortgages. There also there's help that we've given to states through the hardest hit program. But for homeowners who are struggling, it's not important to remember. Sometimes this sounds like an alphabet soup when you talk about HAMP and HARP and all the different programs. The single most important thing to remember is to reach out for help. Don't give up hope. As the Congress said, there's often this sense of frustration. There's fear that people are taking advantage of you. They're calling you on the phone saying, hey, a few thousand dollars, we can help you. And frankly, many families are embarrassed. They feel like, hey, I don't want to let anybody know that I'm struggling with my mortgage. And often that leads to a paralysis where things just get worse and worse. The best thing you can do, reach out for help. Reach out to the congressman's office. Reach out to a HUD-certified housing counselor. Again, the HOPE hotline is 888-995-HOPE. And that's the place where you can get help. Again, twice as likely to be able to stay in your home if you get help from a housing counselor.
And to underline what the Secretary just said, it's very important that you go to credible entities, whether it's your local congressional office, whether it's housing and urban development. But there sadly still are these scam artists out there that are trying to take advantage of individual homeowners. And so we want your listeners to be wary to – if they got a problem, as difficult as it may be, go to credible entities that have the understanding and are legitimate really in their efforts to want to help people. And those would be whether it's – I mean if they're having trouble with the financial institutions, go to your congressional office. If you're having trouble reaching out there, go to the Housing and Urban Development's hotline. But come to – don't listen to these folks necessarily say, boy, do I have a deal for you.
Right. You I think you can just put it simply by letting people know if people want money, then you're talking to the wrong folks.
That's exactly right.
Yep.
The HUD's housing counseling, the help from the congressman's office is free. There is no charge for that assistance. We provide funding every year to housing counselors to do that. And you can find out at our website too, HUD.gov. We have housing counselors in just about every community around the country, and you can find out one located in your area on our website as well.
I think one of the things we've learned from a part of this discussion is we have legislation in place already, but there's much more that can be done and is in the pipeline.
That's right. And look, the good news here is these efforts are starting to have an effect. Remember, when the president came into office, home prices had dropped every single month for 30 months in a row. And our early efforts helped to stabilize the situation. But the fact is there was more that we could do. The congressman was a vocal advocate to say we should push harder and do more.
We needed to do more.
And the range of things that we've rolled out this year, from the refinancing programs to the settlement, are doing more. And the good news is it's having an effect. In the first quarter of this year, there was almost $500 billion of home equity created around the country. 700,000 homeowners got back above water. We expect the second quarter numbers to be even better than that. So we are making progress. And if you look at foreclosure numbers just in the Fresno area, they're down by almost two-thirds from where they were a year ago. So it has gotten better. Having said that, when you still have close to half of all homeowners underwater, there clearly is still more that needs to be done. And the congressman's exactly right that we need to keep pushing, and this legislation that we've talked about is a key piece of needing to do more.
Congressman Costa, when you take a look at, as we mentioned, what we have in place, what do you think we need that would help address some of the specific problems we have here in the Valley?
Well, first of all, passing the legislation next month will be helpful. Secondly, job creation is key to, you know, overall economic recovery. And investing in our infrastructure is critical at this time, whether it's our transportation bill. I mean, usually, certain legislative efforts in Washington are bipartisan. Transportation's always been a bipartisan issue. It sadly got locked up into the partisan warfare of Washington, but we did produce a bill with the president's efforts and bipartisan support on both houses that provided a two-year authorization to continue to invest in our infrastructure. We're now working on an effort between Governor Brown and Secretary Salazar on our long-term water needs, which are critical for our valley. Obviously, without a stable supply of water here in California and in the San Joaquin Valley, our agriculture economy and everything that spins off of our agriculture economy is going to be in jeopardy. In addition to that, we need to get our financial house in order. But there are a number of factors, both at the state and the federal level, that will come to restoring the economy, to reducing unemployment levels back to single-digit levels. When you have Fresno County and neighboring counties anywhere from 14 to 18% unemployment, and I don't think those numbers accurately reflect the real level of unemployment. I think in many cases it's higher. We have a lot of work to do, and I think when interest rates are at all-time low as they are now, it's the time to invest in long-term infrastructure that will last for 50 or 100 years or longer. Transportation projects, water projects, those kinds of things are the kind of smart investments that we can make today that will help the economy, will get people employed again, and at the same time, focus on our long-term needs to stabilize the housing market.
Secretary Donovan, I know you have a 10 o'clock event to get to, but before you do go, you're going to be meeting with local advocates here today. You're also going to meeting with some homeowners. The information that you get, what do you plan to do with that? How does that help you?
Well, we need to know, first of all, that word is getting out. So we want to make sure, as we talked about earlier, that families don't give up. And all of the groups that we're going to be talking to today and the individual homeowners are part of an effort to get the word out that, hey, even if you couldn't refinance before because you're deeply underwater, with HARP 2.0, we can make that available. Elizabeth, the homeowner we'll be meeting with today, is an example of that. But we also want to make sure we're hearing from these groups about what's working and what's not, what more that we can do to make sure that we're holding the lenders accountable, for example. What barriers are there? What mistakes are the servicers making that are stopping families from being able to benefit? And when we know that, we can actually build that into our programs, make sure in our enforcement actions that we're looking at those specific things to hold these lenders accountable for helping homeowners as they're supposed to be doing. So I would also say one other thing, and this goes back to the congressman's point, one specific area where we think we can create jobs and help the housing market as well is something called our neighborhood stabilization efforts. This is an area where we focus on neighborhoods that are particularly hard hit. I talked earlier about what happens when one foreclosure sign goes up next door. What if you have a dozen or more of those signs on one street or in one neighborhood? The effects can be devastating and it creates a spiral of decline. We've been investing in those neighborhoods through neighborhood stabilization that helps put construction workers back to work. Construction was particularly hard hit in the crisis. And rebuilds those homes that are sitting vacant or abandoned in neighborhoods. It's created over 300 jobs just right here in Fresno already. And in 75% of the neighborhoods where we've invested, we've seen home prices start rising because that spiral's been reversed. So we want to double down on that strategy through something called Project Rebuild. That's another area where we think Congress could help us and where Congressman Costa has been such a big supporter. It's worked. It just needs to be bigger and to do more in areas like Fresno where and the entire valley that have been hard hit.
Well, thank you both for coming this morning. Great discussion, great information out to our listeners. Again, Secretary of U.S. Housing and Urban Development, Sean Donovan, and Congressman Jim Costa with the 20th District here in California. Thank you both. I'm Juanita Stevenson, and you are listening to Valley Edition.
Thank you so much.
Support for Valley Edition comes from Kaiser Permanente Fresno and Cahuilla Delta Medical Center.
You're listening to a rebroadcast of Valley Edition. Welcome back. I'm Renita Stevenson, and you are listening to Valley Edition. On August 5th, a gunman opened fire on a Sikh temple in Oak Creek, Wisconsin, killing six worshipers and wounding three others. The crimes not only stunned the nation, but the Sikh community here in the Valley, and brought to light many of the prejudices many Sikhs face. Now Valley Sikhs have come together, and they are reaching out to the people in Wisconsin, raising money for the victims of the shooting. Joining me today is Sharn Puriwal, a leader in the Sikh community here in Fresno. Thank you so much, Mr. Puriwal, for joining us today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Okay. I hope I'm saying your last name correctly.
That's
Puriwal.
Yes.
Close
great.
Enough.
That's good enough.
Okay.
Say the E. It's good.
Okay. First of all, how are members of your temple doing right now? This shooting really must have brought up so many different feelings.
Sure, sure. There are some feelings that are being expressed, and mainly a remorse and why did this tragedy have to happen? There are those who are saying, well, after 9/11, we were kind of worried that something like that might happen because there were other incidences of hate crimes across the country. So that's part of it. And there's some talk about how do we respond to this locally. There's talk about supporting the victims.
The more we learned, the more we learned about the gunman, that he was involved in a white supremacist group, and this was being classified as a hate crime. When that really became known, that was really what was behind this. What was your reaction?
Well, the reaction was, obviously that we feel like we're being singled out as a community that is more visible. We thought perhaps we're being mistaken as, terrorists, as being members of Taliban or Al-Qaeda or something like that because of our appearance, because of the fact that we do wear turbans and beards. And, so much of the media coverage after 9/11 has been showing images of individuals with turbans and beards. And we thought, obviously that's a misconception that can occur. But just the fact that he was a member of a white supremacist group, we felt that probably he just hated everybody who was not white, and perhaps he singled out our community because we are visible because of our turbans and beards.
Why do you think so many people have such misconceptions about the Sikh culture and its people? Because, the Sikh people have a long history here in the Central Valley.
Sure.
Many of those in the community, your business owners, your professionals, you're a part of this community. Why is it still there are so many misconceptions?
Well, I think it's human nature to jump to conclusions about a person's appearance because, we see this with other communities, Orientals. Sometimes people assume that they're Chinese and Hispanics, people assume that they're Mexicans. So I think, it would be nice if people took the time to ask us, who we are. I think that's a common thing, just to assume that, a person with a turban and beard must be from Afghanistan, And I think that's where, and in a sense, I don't blame people because, the common person is, busy with other things such as job, family, education, and all that. I think, oftentimes, especially, we're concerned about finances or the bad economy, we might not take the time to learn about someone who looks different. But we hope that people will, approach the situation with an open mind.
And part of the problem is the assumption, and it's not just with Sikhs, but it's so many of the people will label them and just confuse and say, okay, you are a Muslim. And that's not necessarily like I think many of the Sikh community have said. We don't think, you know, Muslims should be singled out either just because of that. And after 9/11, we saw that here in our valley. There was a great effort by Muslims here, Muslims, to really try to educate people about them, their religion, and who they are. Is that something you all think you're going to have to do? You know, they open, their temple and other places and invited people into their houses of worship. I know you all do that already, but do you think there's going to have to be maybe more of an outreach, perhaps, to try to educate people?
Sure. Sure, definitely. There is going to be an outreach. There already is efforts to start. Actually, we're starting at the school level because, some of the members of the Sikh Council of Central California, we realized that even the school curriculums, the public school curriculum, did not mention Sikhs in their social studies and history curriculum. So, we've been working at the state level, and actually there is a bill that's about to be signed. It's gone through all the steps. It's gone through the Appropriations Committee. That's AB 1540, and that's about to be signed by the governor, which is going to revise the public school curriculum to include information about Sikhs and Sikh history.
And that will definitely help because young people can, from an early age, start learning about the Sikh culture.
Right. We're hoping that early exposure will, make them more aware of who we are.
I mean, what do you want people to know? I mean, when you look at Sikh culture, the Sikh religion, and what's different, to start trying to educate people.
Well, I think one of the basic things about Sikh religion I would like people to know is that it started out as a sort of a unifying thing. Our first prophet, Guru Nanak, when he started his teaching in the 15th century, he didn't even start out saying, "I'm creating a new religion." He just started out saying that, "Hey, we're all children of God. Let's come together and overlook our differences and just come together and realize that we're all praying to God, and we're not that different. We just have different ways of praying to God."
And one of the things that you mentioned, too, are you all going to be having any other events? I know you've had many fundraising events, and there was a candlelight vigil trying to bring people together. Opportunities and events to educate people more.
Well, yeah, we've had the fundraisers in each of our temples. I think the next big event is going to be in November. I don't know if you've heard, but the state of California actually designated November of this year as Sikh Awareness and Appreciation Month. And this is the second time this has happened. And last year it was also, in November was also Sikh Awareness and Appreciation Month. And this has happened, about 2 months ago, that the state of California unanimously, all these assembly members approved this. And so we see that as an opportunity there again to reach out to the public and spread awareness about Sikhism and Sikhs in the U.S. So we're going to have an event on November 10th where, assembly members and even local school superintendents and local officials will be invited to that event.
Now, many of the Sikhs, when you talk about Sikhs in the U.S., many of you were born and raised here, but where is the homeland?
Well, our homeland is Punjab, which is the northern part of is a state in the northern part of India. It borders on Pakistan, and our holiest shrine, the Golden Temple, is located in Amritsar, which is a large city in the state of Punjab.
Okay.
And that, Punjabi is our language.
Right.
So
I thought that it's just important to let people know that. I think it kind of helps with when you can give people some history of the people. I think it helps with the awareness and the education.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if you look at the map, you see the Punjab is looks like a small state on the map, but you know, when there's, you have to remember there's 25 million Sikhs in the world, so that actually makes us the fifth most common religion in the world.
That's also one of the things that I read, that you are the fifth largest organized religions. There's more than 25 million Sikhs worldwide and about 700,000 who are living here in the U.S. Except those are the latest numbers that I have.
And if they put us on the census next time, it'll help define those numbers a little better.
You know, is that another one of the problems?
You're correct. Okay. We're considered, you know, Asian, so we would like to be designated as a, you know, or we're considered Indian, but it would help if we were designated as Sikh. So that'll help us and the public realize how many Sikhs there are in the U.S.
Okay. How have your efforts gone as far as reaching out to the people in Wisconsin?
Well, right now we're doing the fundraisers, of course. We are contacting our people who we know there in Wisconsin and trying to find out, you know, what are the trust funds and whatnot that are set up for these fundraisers. There are also national organizations such as United Sikhs, which is an organization that was formed several years ago and has been designated as a, you know, designated by FEMA as a disaster relief organization. You know, United Sikhs has provided direct disaster relief after Hurricane Katrina, as well as, you know, the earthquake in Haiti. And so United Sikhs has dispatched and are, you know, trying to procure psychiatrists and the like to provide counseling to the individuals that were affected. Also, I belong to an organization called North American Medical and Dental, I'm sorry, North American Sikh Medical and Dental Association, and they are also, you know, in contact with their members to try to find psychiatrists to help out.
Okay, well, thank you very much for joining us this morning and helping to do your part to help educate the Valley and others and tell us about your efforts helping those in Wisconsin. Again, Sharn Puriwal, he is Assistant Secretary of the Sikh Council of Central California. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
I am Juanita Stevenson, and you are listening to Valley Edition. We'll be right back. You're listening to a rebroadcast of Valley Edition. Welcome back. I'm Juanita Stevenson, and you are listening to Valley Edition. Do you play an instrument, or would you like to learn? Well, there is a great opportunity for you to not only learn, but become a member of the New Horizons Band and Orchestra. Joining me to talk more about this and the opportunities there is well-known area music teacher and band leader Archie Rader. Thanks so much for coming in.
Well, it's great to be here.
You know, that's one of the things a lot of people think about. You know, they may have played an instrument when they were a kid and they put it down and they haven't put it, picked it back up. So this is a great opportunity for people. Is this for people who have a music background, or is there a place for beginners?
Well, there's definitely a place for beginners. We have, there's a number of folks that started when we first brought the program on in about 4 years ago, and they're playing in the band. They're doing very well. It's something that maybe they missed when they were in grade school. The music teacher came around and said, "Who's interested?" And for some reason or other, they were interested, but they didn't act upon it. Well, now that they're 50 or older, somewhere around there, they can act upon it. In fact, we had a fella 95 years old and wanted to play clarinet.
Never too late.
I know, and he did pretty well, actually. So there's an opportunity for beginners. And then I just responded to an email just recently. This fellow said, "Well, I haven't played my trumpet for 50 years. He says, "I want to get back into it, so I've been working on it." He says, "What can I do?" I said, "Well, come the 29th of this month to our informational meeting, and we'll tell you how we handle all this kind of stuff and how you can get your skills back and become a member of the band."
Now, you mentioned it. What do people need to do? You are going to have an informational meeting to kind of let people know exactly
That's
what you plan to do. When is that going to be and where?
That's
going to
be – the informational meeting will be the last Wednesday of this month. That would be the 29th. It's going to be held in the University High School band room and maybe the orchestra room, depending on how many people are really interested. And it's on the Fresno State campus. It's specifically, it's across from parking lot C.
Okay. So this is a class.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's considered a class because we're sponsored by the Division of Continuing and Global Education. And they're the ones that Cindy Trent, she's the one that I introduced this program to her a number of years ago. She says, oh, I want to do that. I said, in fact, I want to be in it. I think that's why she said she wanted to do it.
Now, what do people need to bring? Now, do they need an instrument?
Oh, yes, they need an instrument. That's one of the – this is this whole program is not publicly funded. We fund it with the fee that we ask the students, the musicians, to pay each semester. So they have to have whatever instrument they're interested in. They could rent it from any one of the local music stores, or maybe there's one in the closet – like one of our folks had, and she just had it reconditioned and brought it. And then there's one fellow said, well, he tried this one instrument at the store, and he said he didn't particularly like it. So he went and bought a brand new one.
Yeah.
So he sort of committed.
Right. Well, you know, it is, and it's a great time for people, really,
yes.
At that age, if you say around 50 or older or more, to really learn something new and to pick up something that they had to put down either because of, their obligations with family and work
Oh, sure.
And all that other stuff. Now, how often, what kind of commitment are we talking about here? How often will people meet? How often are the classes?
Well, music is, our situation is, we like to play concerts. So the focus is, yes, we do have a concert at the end of the year. Beginners, they play something on that concert. but by and large, we have to focus on that concert. So in order to prepare for this, we meet every Wednesday night, with the exception of the Wednesday of Thanksgiving. And there's two different times. Now, we're not just a band. We also have an orchestra.
Exactly.
And we have string players. So the string players come at 5:30, and the band players, they come at 6:30, and they go for 2 hours. And it's during that time, our teachers, Craig Erker, Elaine Ikimoto, and myself, we work with the students. And if we have enough people that sign up, we will bring in more teachers to handle the load.
And you said really the part of this and the point of this is you will have a concert.
Oh, yes, you bet. We have it at the concert hall, usually at the music building on Fresno State's campus.
Okay, and when do you hope to have your concert?
That will be around the second week of December.
Okay. So... And when do you hope to start this class? Because
the class is the following week. The 29th is an informational meeting. We ask the people to sign up, and they don't have to commit themselves unless they want to that night. But on the 5th, the next Wednesday, that's when the whole thing starts up, officially starts up.
Why is this something that's important to you? Why did you start this up? Because we know, I mean, you love music.
Oh, you bet. I've been doing this for 55 years. Yeah, I actually, my brother, who lives in Arizona, introduced me to it. Mm-hmm. He says, I'm starting this New Horizons program. And I said, oh, that sounds pretty interesting. I think I'll try it there in Fresno. So I looked over this situation and found out a little bit about it. And I found that when I was back in Ohio on a visit, I found out there was a New Horizons program at the college where I graduated from. So I called him up and I said, hey, how about letting me come and visit you? So the director said, yeah, come on. So I spent a whole evening there, and I got all excited when I saw the excitement in the eyes of those people. It was moving. Mm-hmm. So I decided, well, I'm going to try to do it. And I came back to Fresno and traveled around all over the place trying to find someone to commit themselves to help us out. So finally, that's when I discovered Cindy. Or we discovered each other, I guess.
Right. You both have the same kind of love for music.
That's absolutely right. Now, one of the things about being in this program is when you come to the rehearsals, you leave everything at the door, everything else. You just focus on the music. You focus on the meeting the people around you. You focus on, you just forget about the problems you have or what you're going to be doing. It's just music and the enjoyment of making music.
Wow, that sounds great. A great opportunity for people. And not only that, it's you're learning something new.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You're engaging yourself and you're meeting new people.
Right. And now, like I said, I taught for a number of years. All those years, I've always been interested in technology. And so I've never closed my eyes or turned my back on the newest stuff. So when I was hired to do the band, the symphonic band at University High School, I walked into the band room, and they have the latest stuff.
Ooh.
They do.
And that's always neat, isn't
it?
Oh,
and so it helps us teach the seniors because they have a lot of focus. They're motivated. And we have things that we can project on the wall. It's just a marvel. I have to mention one program, Smart Music. All the years I've been teaching, I've been trying to find the magic bullet.
And that's it.
That's the closest thing I've come to. And I tell you, it really makes a huge difference with working with these folks.
And that's what you find people after maybe they haven't picked up their instrument in a while. When they start again, it kind of all comes back.
Well, it's like riding a bicycle.
Yeah.
You don't fall off.
Well, thank you so much, Archie Rader, instructor of New Horizons Band and Orchestra. For those of you who want to participate, like he said, there's an informational meeting again on what date?
It's last Wednesday of this month, the 29th of August.
At University.
University High School Band Room. Oh, and there's a parking lot across the street, and there is a fee to park in Fresno State. I think everybody knows that.
Yeah. You can sneak sometimes, so don't tell them I told you that.
Okay,
okay, thanks a lot, Mr. Rader. Thanks for joining us.
I'm happy to be here.
Right. Well, that is all for us today on Valley Edition. You can hear our audio archives and subscribe to our podcast online at kvpr.org. We welcome your comments and suggestions. And you can also email us at talk@kvpr.org. For audio engineer Marv Allen, production and operations manager Don Weaver, and executive producer Joe Moore, I'm Juanita Stevenson, and this is Valley Edition on Valley Public Radio.
Support for Valley Edition comes from the James Irvine Foundation.